On Saturday, August 31st, the Queens Gaels will host the McMaster Marauders for their home opener at Richardson Memorial Stadium. Kickoff is scheduled for 6 p.m. and CFRC's coverage will begin at 5:45.
Danger, danger. The following contains explicit content. Please use caution while you are tuned in.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the persons appearing on the program.
Today on Rainbow Country, gay porn star Jason Collins, a.k.a. Masculine Jason. Two names, one gay porn star. That and more on episode 419, so stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hello, my name is Conchita.
And I'm Barbie Q.
And my name is Hardcora. And we are the Beat Girls.
You're listening to
Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Hello and welcome to yet another journey through Rainbow Country. As I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm producer and host, Mark Tara. By the way, Rainbow Country originates from CIUT-FM in Toronto and now proudly in syndication across Canada from coast to coast to coast. The Yukon, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, the east coast of Canada in Newfoundland, Ontario, even down to Buffalo, New York, and online. Well, thanks to you tuning in, streaming, downloading, but ultimately listening. Together we continue to build Rainbow Country into a nationally syndicated gay radio show, as well as a number one Canadian LGBT podcast on feedspot.com. So today, you may know him as Jason Collins, or you may know him as Masculine Jason. Either way, two names, one gay porn star. And Jason joins me today to talk about the ever-evolving porn industry, why he left the gay porn studio system, and more. Plus in hour two, music from LGBT artists, independent artists, voices that we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, and on this episode I'm featuring some classic house, some queer new music, and more. All that lies ahead as we start Journey 419 through Rainbow Country, and our first stop, the Rainbow Country Bookstore. Today, journalist and author Brian Bradley reads from his celebrity biography, Outrageous Misfits, female impersonator Craig Russell and his wife, Lori Russell Eady. By the way, on Amazon.ca, Outrageous Misfits has a rating of 4.7 out of 5 stars.
Went on to star in a movie credited as a groundbreaking film for gay culture and a force that pushed the Canadian film scene forward. I was 13 years old, incredibly naive, and living in a small francophone community outside Sudbury, Ontario when I first heard the name Craig Russell. I was watching something rather bland on television, and all of a sudden this colorful, flamboyant man was mentioned in a commercial promoting a documentary. I remember it so clearly. His coiffed hair and makeup, talk of a friendship with actress Mae West, brazen footage of him singing in a wig and gown, and mentioned that self-confidence eluded him despite his incredible success. I had immediate questions. Who was this effeminate man in makeup? Was he a crossdresser? He lived with an old lady movie star? And he got to make a movie? Why did he get to do things like this? Craig was like no one I'd ever known. I figure he was likely gay. I didn't know any gay people, nor did I see any in the television shows or movies I watched. Was this what gay men were like? I was skeptical, wondering why there'd be a documentary about someone like that, and why it was worth talking about. I had so much to learn about the world. A decade later, I was a journalism graduate with an interest in social history and biography when Craig's name crossed my path again. I was researching Margaret Gibson, a celebrated writer who suffered from schizophrenia, and an article about her mentioned Craig. They had been friends and roommates. I wondered what that could have been like. I looked up one of their shared friends in the phone book and called her up, telling her I had an interest in both Margaret, the writer who struggled with what she called madness, and Craig, the flamboyant female impressionist who seemed so unrecognized and misunderstood. I got more than I bargained for. That conversation spawned so much intrigue that I spent the next decade of my life researching and learning about Craig. Initially, it was a hobby, but by 2017, my efforts were full-time, and I knew there was a book to be written about his life. His story had talents to be celebrated, intrigues to be understood, and curious situations to be explained. In learning about Craig, I came to learn about Lori, a shy and demure, theater-loving file clerk who joined his world of make-believe and became his wife. What a turn of events that must have been for her. Who gets to marry their favorite movie star? How did that happen? What was their marriage like? I had to know. I became just as enamored with Lori as I was with Craig, and a biography about one became a biography about two. And what lives they lived. As if they weren't both outrageous and interesting enough, Craig and Lori's life and their careers coincided with gay liberation. In the years after the Stonewall riots in the United States, Toronto had its first annual Gay Pride Week, gay bars quietly opened along Yonge Street, the local drag scene began to take shape, and there was a push to include sexual orientation in the Ontario Human Rights Code. The atmosphere was as motivating as it was frightening. Police raided bathhouses, and homophobic thugs lurked around parks and protests. Numerous men turned up murdered after frequenting popular gay establishments. Craig and Lori were not necessarily politically engaged in the changing times, but they shared the notion they could do as they pleased with no apologies or regrets. They defied gender conventions and eschewed the heteronormative. Their lives and careers blossomed at the beginning of the throbbing sexual revolution and the new wave counterculture brought to the stage, radio, television, and film by icons like David Bowie, Freddie Mercury, Carol Pope, and Boy George. Craig and Lori were strange people, square pegs in a world of round holes. Unusual, misfits. That is a challenging existence, but their challenges did not stop there. Few people knew it, but Craig's life was gripped by mental illness. Mental health was not only poorly understood when he was alive, it simply was not a conversation that was had. Craig self-medicated, and his choice of cocaine led to years of drug dependency. There wasn't a conversation about addiction then either. It was a vicious cycle from which he could not recover. Lori faced her own traumas. She had a physically and emotionally abusive parent, was a survivor of rape, and suffered multiple accidents that broke her body and took from her spirit. Suffering from his own mental illness, Craig was at times abusive too. Lori never realized she was a victim of abuse, nor did she see that, in her dependency, she was an enabler, and her behavior demonstrated an unhealthy obsession with Craig. Few knew about their challenges, and in time, friends, fans, and even some family came to look at both of them with raised eyebrows. Opinions and reactions to their outlandish behavior shifted from delightful curiosity to confusion and embarrassment. That judgment compounded Craig's and Lori's challenges, putting another ceiling over them that they could not break through, even after having seemingly broken through every possible barrier.
Glad Day Bookshop started in Gerald Moldenhauer's backpack around 1972. Gerald figured that to build community, we needed access to our history, our culture, our literature, our porn. He started schlepping books and magazines from one queer event to another to sell. As the collection got bigger, he moved it to a hall in the commune where he lived, in an old house on Seton Street in downtown Toronto. In those days, to see the books, you needed to phone first to make an appointment to come over. Glad Day finally opened a fully-fledged store in the late 1970s, and that's when the more public profile started causing problems. An issue with the Canadian book business is that a lot of titles are published elsewhere and therefore need to be imported, and that means they all have to pass through Canada Customs. And Canada Customs in those days was not about to let dirty, smutty, queer literature cross the border to corrupt innocent Canadians. Glad Day started having books seized and shipments blocked starting in 1977. It got worse in the 80s. Even the joy of gay sex got banned as obscene. And even if books got through customs, they were still not safe. In April 82, police raided Glad Day and charged employee Kevin Orr with selling obscene material. And that wouldn't be the last raid. Glad Day was embroiled in court cases for years. Some American publications actually started producing special Canadian editions with pages blanked out to get them across the border. In 1983, partners Bruce Smythe and Jim Deva started a gay bookstore in Vancouver called Little Sisters. Little Sisters was soon experiencing custom seizures as well. That, what was infuriating was that big mainstream bookstores were now importing and selling many of the same titles without a problem. It was just small gay-run bookstores that were being targeted. Little Sisters also fought the custom seizures through the courts. But it took years and thousands of dollars before the Supreme Court finally decided that the seizures were a violation of the Charter of Rights. That was in 2000. Customs still had the right to stop materials, but the onus was on them to prove they were obscene. Customs censorship finally began to grind to a halt. By this time, queer material was widely available, and the digital age meant that borders were being largely irrelevant anyway. But today, both Glad Day and Little Sisters continue to operate as bookstores. Glad Day is actually the oldest surviving gay bookstore in the world. So if you are in Toronto or Vancouver, be sure to check them out. They're part of the living history of our community. This is Tim McCaskill, author of Queer Progress.
Up next, gay porn star Jason Collins.
Hi everyone, this is Mark Tewksbury, Olympic champion, leader, humanitarian. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Jason Collins, hi, how are you?
Doing well, yourself?
I am well. Thank you for being here to have your voice, your story be heard by the LGBT community and beyond. So thank you for this. You are an adult performer. You have a popular YouTube channel as well as a YouTube series. But I want to start here with yourself. People may know you, especially in the gay community, as Masculine Jason. You are also Jason Collins. Okay, so one's obviously your professional name, your stage name. The other one, I'm assuming, is your given name, Jason Collins. Which identity do you think represents you the best?
Actually, funny story there. So when I first got into sex work, my ex actually introduced me to it, and she was a he when we were dating, but she transitioned. So she's actually the one who picked Masculine Jason, and I like that. But when I started doing studio porn, they're like, yeah, you can't use Masculine Jason. You have to pick a normal sounding name. And one of the studio directors or whatever picked the name Jason Collins. Unbeknownst to me at the time, that happened to also be the name as a famous openly gay basketball player. So like, most of my studio work is done under the name Jason Collins, but Masculine Jason's the name that I preferred.
Okay.
So I don't know. It's just, that's the name she came up with, and I'm kind of stuck with it ever since.
So you have two professional names then?
Yeah.
Understood. Understood. So, like I said, you are an adult performer, and you have a YouTube channel. You have a YouTube series that's really popular. But in regards to getting into porn, you just, how did you get into porn originally?
So I was doing escorting full time, and Jessie Dubai actually reached out to me. She's a really famous trans performer. She reached out to me and she asked if I was interested in shooting with her. And she offered to pay me. And if I'm being totally honest, I just wanted to have sex with her because I thought she was super hot. And so I get there, we start going through the shooting process. And one of my biggest complaints about escorting was, if you're not actively working, you're not making any money. So like if you go on vacation, you know, your income goes to zero. And when, you know, we were going through the shooting process and everything, like the entrepreneurial side of me started thinking, because, you know, with porn, it's like residual income and you have a much more stable income as opposed to like the feast or famine. And I asked her, I was like, how about you don't pay me and you show me how to do what you do instead? And she was like, sure. And that was it. I remember the very next day I went to Best Buy and I bought like $20,000, like worth the best filming equipment possible, like a MacBook Pro for editing. Like I jumped headfirst into it.
And how long ago was that?
Oh God, I have no concept of time. I want to say like 7-8 years ago, give or take.
Okay.
So it was a while.
And how has the process been for you, generally speaking, in regards to when you started and where you are today? How has that journey been for you? Has it been challenging? Has it been an easy road for the last 7 years?
Yeah, no, I mean, one thing I love about doing this is that your work compounds. So like, let's say you have a sales job, right? Today you're, oh my God, you know, we love you, you're amazing, Mark. And then the next day you're a piece of shit, you didn't sell anything. You're amazing, you're a piece, like it's up and down. And with porn, you know, everything constantly compounds. So you shoot with this person that allows you to shoot with this person that, you know, and you're constantly gaining followers and subscribers. And, you know, you can see your business growing, if you will. And I mean, there's definitely been a few things that have bothered me, like the level of unprofessionalism and like amateur hour. Like a lot of people in this industry don't have the best work ethic. Let's just say that.
Are you talking about the talent or the studio side of?
Okay. No, the talent.
Right.
So like one of my personal favorites was I had a shoot booked and the guy I was shooting with texted me 2 hours before and he's like, oh, sorry, man, I can't shoot together today. I'm too hungover. And I'm just like, oh my God, really? Seriously? So.
So you've done work for professional studios, I believe, like Raging Stallion, Falcon Studios, I believe, just to name two.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
And my understanding is something happened where you decided to leave, you know, the studio system and do your own work, create your own work.
Yeah.
Is that correct? And if so, what happened that made you decide to leave, you know, essentially the studio system?
So I was never a big fan of traveling. Like I hate it more than anything. I can barely tolerate it for vacation. But I won't name the studio just because I think that's trashy. But there was a scene where I was whipping my studio partner. I was behind him and he was like chained up. with his arms out, and the director called cut, and I went over to it, you know, and I could see the guy's face, and this dude was like bawling his eyes out. I mean, he was so far from not okay. It was unreal. And like, we sat down, him and I were talking, and I was 100% convinced this dude was going to go home and blow his brains out. Like, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, you know, the director was really, oh, no, no, he'll be okay. Let's keep going, you know, very pushy. And I remember I was just like, yeah, like, this dude's got some serious unresolved trauma. I don't know what from, but I was just like, I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm not going to be a part of this dude going home and killing himself. And it also felt kind of rapey. And what I mean by that is, I think a mistake a lot of sex workers make, whether it's escorting or porn or whatever, is they put themselves in a position financially where they can't afford to say no. And I had a feeling that my co-star on this particular scene was just saying yes, that he'll go along with the scene because, you know, his rent was due the next day, or he had to pay his car payment or whatever. And for me personally, like, my own moral compass, if someone can't afford to say no, they can't consent, period. And I could not shake that feeling. And for a while there, before I stepped away from studio work too, I was getting typecast into these, like, I'm fine with like BDSM or dom sub, but almost like this sadistic torture shit. Cause, you know, no director looks at me and is like, oh, this guy's a teddy bear, let's cast him in this sensual and passionate scene. You know, like, I did this to myself, you know, by looking the way I do. But yeah, no, between getting cast in those really sadistic roles and that scene that my co-star was clearly not okay, I was like, screw this, I'm done. Like, I'm going to focus on my own content. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I was at a point with my own content where I was making more from that than studio work. So, yeah.
So do you think, looking back where you are today, looking back on that experience, do you think that experience was, while it is and was traumatic for you, it was probably a good thing in the long run, because it maybe was the impetus for you to, you know, focus 100% on your own content. Do you see that as a positive as well, that experience?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that absolutely there's a silver lining with anything. I mean, I had a truly horrific childhood, and I can name 20 positives that came out of that. So I think there's a silver lining to everything. And I think me recently coming back to studio work, I've had a much different experience this time around.
So you're creating your own content. So here you are, you get into porn, you're in the studio system, and you're also creating your own work, and then you leave the studio system and you're focusing on your own work. And now you just mentioned you're back to the studio system, like getting, like working with other studios again. Are you essentially licensing your own content then, or are they hiring you as talent?
No, the studio scenes I've done recently, they were all hiring me. So
do you see yourself, you know, as essentially licensing the stuff that you create to other studios at some point? Or is that even a possibility?
Yeah, it was a few years ago, but I had one studio reach out to me and had me license like 20 or 30 videos to them. But yeah, I mean, that's something I would be open to. But I mean,
You take it as it comes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my main thing is I just need to be able to live with myself and admire the man I see in the mirror. And that's what I love about my own content is that, you know, I'm shooting the content that I want to, that, not to sound cheesy, but has kind of like a, not moral to it, but like is I'm trying to showcase like genuine intimacy or like body positivity or, you know, certain things like, or, you know, for example, and I do this in my private life and I assumed everyone did it. Apparently not, because I get people commenting all the time, but like, for me, sex doesn't end when I come. Like, I'm not like, oh yeah, I came, it's over, I got mine. So, you know, like in my scenes, you know, as soon as I come, I'll always ask my partner, like, you know, what can I do to make you come? Are you completely satisfied? What else can I do for you? And, you know, I think that
you do sound like a teddy bear.
So that's like, I think that's important for other men to see that and think, oh wow, maybe, you know, perhaps I should do that. So I just assumed everyone did. But
so what type of you know, body types and genders do you work with, do you tend to hire when you when you're creating your content?
I don't have a type. I mean, even if you looked at, like, if I were to show you a picture of my exes, there would be absolutely no discernible pattern at all, whether it comes to age, body type, race, any of that stuff.
So you work with trans performers, you work with younger people, older people. Do you tend to work more with men?
Yes. I would say men make up 90% of my content. Trans would be 8%. Women would be 2%.
And for you and your own personal sexuality, how do you see yourself? Are you pansexual? Are you, where do you fall?
And if you want to attach a label to it, I would say pansexual, but I've always just said, I don't know, I'm just me. I don't really put that much thought into it.
Yeah, I hear you. The porn industry has really changed and evolved, especially when it comes to technology. You've got, you know, you've got sites like OnlyFans and Just for Fans and Chatterbait and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And with, you know, just a smartphone, one can become, you know, a pornographer, essentially. What are your thoughts on the evolution of the porn industry, how it's evolved? What are your thoughts on that generally? And the other part to that question is, how do you rise above the noise of, because there's so much content out there, how do you stand apart from that, all those others?
So I think the evolution of porn is a good thing, just because the way it used to be, studios would kind of gatekeep, if you will. And, you know, they would only cast certain types. And, you know, the studios were deciding what was attractive or sexy or whatever. And, you know, whereas now, like you said, anyone with a smartphone can start creating content. And, you know, I'll get people all the time that are like, oh, I'd love to do porn, but I look like XYZ. And, like, there's so many insanely popular creators, like, Santana XXL, like, he is a big, big boy. Like, he's got lots of juice on him. And he's black and he's got an insane following. Like, for women, there's, Leilani Lewis or Leilani Lee or something. Like, she's a super thickums, and again, huge following. And, you know, you've got dwarves who are doing extremely well. And instead of the studios gatekeeping, you know, you've got people that are getting by on their own merit, and the fans, it's essentially turned into a democracy because the fans are the ones, you know, voting with their dollars. And even you're starting to see some of the studios change and pivot who they're casting to try and keep up with it. How to separate yourself? I think the biggest thing is just your personality and having something unique that sets you apart. Because, you know, let's say, for example, who's very...
Well, what do you think sets you apart from your from the others around you?
I would say, like, my masculinity, my tattoos, and your really image? Like what?
Your image, your look?
Yes. My image, and also like how I, like I said, I showcase that intimacy and that body positivity, and, you know, that, because a lot of performers, you'll look at their feed and basically all they shoot with is their clone, or they'll have one specific type. You know, they just shoot with them over and over and over and over and over again. And, you know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me and be like, oh, hey, I love the fact that you shoot with bigger guys. Like, you know, it's given me a lot of confidence and made me feel much better about myself. And I mean, I think also my YouTube channel plays a huge part too, because, you know, if all you are is like a dick or a body to someone, the novelty of that shit wears off pretty quickly. And I think the fans or subscribers, if you will, you know, really, they stick with someone who they connect with. Like, think of a Hollywood actor or something, or a musician that you like. I'm guessing that there's something in their backstory that you connected with where you're like, damn, you know what? I really like this guy. I'm going to go see every movie he's in, or I'm going to buy, you know, every Madonna album. Do you see what I mean? Like, there was something about that person that you just, you connected with. And I think that's one of the things that makes a difference now, is the ability to connect with the fans and become relatable and, you know, those types of things.
And on that note, we'll return after this Rainbow Country update.
Hi, I'm Joey Lamar, best-selling author of Mambo Lips and Salsa Hips, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
So, as you know, Rainbow Country airs on broadcast radio, streaming, and as an edited podcast. Most of those outlets and platforms are listener-supported. So, if you think what I'm doing here on Rainbow Country, working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond, is worthwhile, I hope you'll consider making a donation to this very outlet you are tuned to. If you happen to be listening to the edited podcast version, I hope you'll consider making a donation to an outlet that does carry Rainbow Country. How can you do this? Simple. Head over to marktara.com, where everything is connected, and hit the donation banner. That's where you'll find a list of all the outlets that carry Rainbow Country. A little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. Let your voice, let your support be heard.
Hi, I'm Jamie B. of TG CD Style Toronto, and I'm a professional feminization makeup artist and stylist providing male-to-female transformations and mentoring to those who identify as a cross-dresser or a trans woman. I first heard of Rainbow Country and Mark Tara in trying to find a radio station that specifically caters to the LGBT community, and I'm so grateful I found this station. It's crucial having a platform like Rainbow Country that welcomes all aspects of the queer community, including allies like myself and what I do. It casts a spotlight on specific needs and interests of human beings, ensuring that people from all walks of life are being validated. It's a real privilege to be able to work with cross-dressers and trans women by helping them align themselves with their feminine energy through the glorious feminization process. So, I want to thank Rainbow Country and Mark Tara for providing this platform for all of us.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And of course our artists and the things that we do globally and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So support, tune in. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Keegan Hurst, former professional rugby player, coach, raving homosexual, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
So Jason, you just mentioned your YouTube channel, and you have a very popular show on there, Porn Star Confessions. Talk to me about the series Porn Star Confessions, and what inspired you to create this? Telling porn star secrets.
So what inspired me to create it was I was actually on the dating apps at the time, and like over and over and over and over again, I kept having the same experience where it was generally one of two reactions. It was A, ooh, cool, you're a porn star, can I have my turn on the ride? They're viewing you like an amusement park. Or number two, it was, oh, you're a porn star? Yeah, I can never date one of you. You know, it was, you know, because people have this image or idea in their head that if you do porn, you're like a drug addict or an alcoholic or a sex addict, or you're just like a train wreck, right? Like nothing positive is going to come to your average person's mind. And I just had someone tell me something, and it's just like, and I remember I was at the gym, I was doing like the pec deck, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to start interviewing porn stars because I want to break down these stereotypes that porn stars are like all these negative things. And I reached out to Trip Richards, and he's like, yeah, I'll totally do one with you. And he was like my first guest. And then it just kept growing and growing and growing from there. So yeah, and it is interesting though to see there's like certain themes that reoccur a lot. Like one thing that I've lost count of how many people I've interviewed who've had this experience is they'll meet someone that someone's totally okay with them doing porn until they're not. Whether that's 3 months later, 6 months later, a year later, it happens. You know, people
in a dating situation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm not cool with you doing porn, or can you not do this, or can you not do that? And then, you know, it ends up breaking him up. And I've just frankly heard that story so many times, it just breaks my heart. I'm just like, wow.
So like, so for you personally, doing porn and your personal life, how do you juggle the two? Are you able to have a personal intimate relationship outside of your job?
Absolutely. If anything, porn has completely and utterly destroyed my interest in sex outside of a relationship, outside of work. So for me, like, the most fulfilling sex happens inside of a relationship. And I mean, yeah, I even remember when I was on the dating apps, you know, I would have people all the time like, oh yeah, I'm looking for a one night stand, or I'm just looking for friends with benefits or a fuck buddy or whatever. I'm just like, why? No, like, that doesn't interest me. Like, why in the hell would I fuck you for free when I could fuck someone else and film it and get paid doing it? You know what I mean? And chances are the professional is going to be much, much better. And it just, it all comes down to opportunity cost. So for me, like, sex on camera and sex in my private life are completely different, because in my private life, the only two positions I actually like are missionary and riding. That's it. Like, if I start dating someone, I tell them off the bat, I'm like, those are your two options. There ain't any others. But, you know, on camera, obviously, I can't just do those two positions over and over and over again. So, you know, and there's certain things you do for the camera that look super hot, but, you know, aren't in person. Like, I remember Seamus O'Reilly flew out here to stay with me last week. And I was like, oh, do you want to shoot a video on one of my Harleys, like, while smoking a cigar and shit? And he's like, yeah, you know, it sounds super hot. And I'm like, I got to be honest with you, it looks super hot. The idea of it is super hot. But I'm telling you right now, it is uncomfortable as fuck. He's like, that's cool. You know, so I just think a lot of people don't understand that. I mean, or even I'll give you an example, actually, perfect example. And everyone I've interviewed has agreed. So like reverse cowboy or cowgirl, that position looks super hot in porn. Like, and I'm guilty, but I'm perpetuating that shit. Cause if I'm watching porn, that's the position I'm going to watch. However, I would never do that position off camera, and no other porn star I've interviewed, they're all like, I fucking hate that position, but it looks super hot on camera.
What porn stars are really thinking and what they really do in their real lives. Totally different to what they do on camera. So I take it that you are a cigar fan.
I am.
How did you get turned on to cigars? Was that a while ago?
So that was actually like a total coincidence, because like when I was growing up, Arnold Schwarzenegger was really big. Mm-hmm. And like I looked up to him, and he's actually what got me turned on to cigars. So I'd been smoking cigars like, you know, my entire adult life. Mm. And I didn't know that was like a thing that was, you know, tied into sex. And sometimes I'll post on like social media, like these 1-2 minute clips of like advice or, hey, you know, if you were presented with this situation, what would you do or what would you prefer or whatever? And one day I just happened to be smoking a cigar in one of those videos, and it like blew up. And everyone's like, oh my God, it's so fucking hot when you smoke a cigar. And I was like, really? Okay. And then I just like discovered that by total happenstance. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of become like my image or my brand ever since. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jason, here's my last question for you. And I'm going to start the question with a quote, and I'm quoting you. Wow. And it's, quote, "I can guarantee you will never find another guy who comes like me. It's a one-of-a-kind experience, think Tarzan, but louder and more intense," unquote. So here's my last question for you, and it's simply this. What turns the porn star on? What turns you on? What gets you off?
Huh. Oh, I thought you were asking about, okay. So to the first part of the question, the me screaming when I come, that is not acting. I've been that way my entire life. I don't know why. Like, I remember in like my late 20s, I lived in a duplex. And I remember this is long before porn. I remember my next door neighbor being like, boom, 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 like pounding on the fucking wall every time I'd come. Cause the sound would go through the wall. But yeah, no, I always warn my partners about it, but it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon for my partner's eardrums to be ringing afterwards. I'm that loud in person. Mm-hmm. And then apparently I moan, or not moan, but like I purr like a mountain lion purrs afterwards. Like it's a very deep grumble. But what turns me on, interestingly, and this is going to sound so fucking weird because I've never known another person like this. I don't know if I would call it a fetish, but I kind of have like a stomach fetish. I don't know why. I just like, there's something about someone's, like, I would never like, I don't know. Something about someone's stomach is incredibly sexy to me. So if someone's like wearing something and their stomach's covered, it's like, but you know, if their stomach's showing, then, you know, we're off to the races. And I have no idea where that comes from. It's, I guess the best way to describe it is my reaction to someone's stomach would kind of be like your stereotypical straight male's reaction to like a pair of tits.
Mm. And so a big stomach, a flat stomach, a six pack, whatever.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. I noticed that too when I was on the dating apps. So I would be talking to people and I would tell them that I'm like, I have like a thing for stomachs I can't explain. And they would be like, oh, well, you're going to hate it because my stomach is, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I didn't say it had to look a certain way. Like, I just like stomach. So it doesn't have to be like, you know, because people would look at me, so they assume I want like some six pack. I'm like, I didn't say that. Like, I just said I like stomachs. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing for me is I just feed off of like my partner's energy, because like if my partner's verbal or they're moaning or, you know, they're really, really into it, I love that. Like, that's what I feed off of. If I was having sex with someone and they weren't like making a sound, I'd be like, yeah, no, I'm good. Fuck. I'm so sensitive to someone's like energy and enthusiasm. And if I don't think someone's into something, it becomes an instant turn off. And then kissing also is like huge for me. Like if there's no kissing, I'm just kind of like,
booty calls over.
And then something else though, I did discover recently too. A video partner was like, oh, hey, do you mind if I like, I forget what he said, but basically I go down on your armpits, like, you know, lick and rub his beard in there and whatever. And I was like, okay, I don't care. I'm open. You're welcome to try. And he did it. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? I'm like, this fucking feels amazing. Holy shit. And then the last thing would be getting massaged, like a little secret about me. No idea why, couldn't tell you. But if someone massages my feet for like 5-10 minutes prior to sex, I will come like 2 to 3 times as much. No idea why. It just, that's the way it works.
Wow. Wow. Well, yeah. There you go. Jason Collins, masculine Jason, take your pick. Well said. I have to say, thank you so much for your time. Well said, well done, well curated, well filmed, well made. You pornographer, you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You can find Jason Collins' popular show, Porn Star Confessions, on YouTube. And for even more, simply visit masculinejason.com.
Bill 7, to ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing based on a person's sexual orientation was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill, but without some progressive conservative legislators backing, a divisive split could rack the province. 4 PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen, Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
Hi, I'm comic artist and author Phil Jimenez, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Taking us to hour two of Rainbow Country, legendary 70s porn director Gerard Damiano talks about the legacy of his 1972 porn classic, Deep Throat. Plus, we'll hear a couple tracks from the Deep Throat soundtrack, La 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 and She's Gotta Have It.
I think it was the first time that anyone ever treated sex openly, honestly, humorously, as though we were doing nothing that we had to be ashamed about. It shows you if you're gay, it's okay to be gay. If you're heterosexual, it's okay to be heterosexual. Whatever it is that you feel like you want to do, whatever it is, don't be ashamed of it. Deep Throat did that. La 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 la
set. When she looks into the mirror, she sees herself and knows she's so fine. Satisfaction's growing nearer. She'd even make the devil come down. So get it up. She's got to have it. She's got to have it.
Hi, this is Police Constable Danielle Botno, also known as LGBT Cop, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
This is hour two of Rainbow Country.